and welcome to the Guess What I Heard podcast presented by Bakersfield Republican Women Federated. BRWF will bring you insights, interviews, and inspiration from the heart of Kern County. I am your host, Nicole Jones, and today we are diving into the rich and impactful work of BRWF. Thank you for joining us for our second episode of Guess What I Heard podcast. Today I am here with BRWF President Linda Willis and First Vice President of BRWF, Patty Vignolo. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Patty.
Hi, Linda.
So we had a busy week. On Tuesday, we had our monthly member meeting at Seven Oaks, and we had a wonderful guest there. But Linda, can you tell us a little bit about the legislative updates that are going on right now?
Yes, at our last meeting, just 2 days ago, actually March 12th, we all met over at Seven Oaks Country Club. We had about 200 members and associate members attend, as well as some guests. And we had some people coming down from Sacramento to give us an update about what's going on up in the legislature. Tracy Richardson is from Senator Shannon Grove's office, and she was talking about SB 1414. Now, if you remember, if you listened to our podcast before, if you know anything about this, last year SB 14 was passed, another bill that Senator Grove put out on the Senate floor. And after a lot of debate and being shot down one time, it actually passed, thank God. And it was about addressing the traffickers in the human trafficking side of the equation on giving them stricter penalties for engaging in human trafficking. So this year, Senator Grove has introduced SB 1414, which is going to attack the buyers for human trafficking. And right now, under existing law, if a person solicited by someone was a minor, and the person who solicited the minor knew or reasonably should have known that the person was a minor, the offense, if caught, is punishable by imprisonment in the county jail for a mandatory minimum of 2 days. 2 days. And not to exceed 1 year, by a fine not to exceed $10,000, or by both such fine and imprisonment. Okay, this bill that she has introduced would instead, if a person has knowingly solicited from a minor for sex acts, that person's offense would be punishable by imprisonment in a state prison for 2, 3, or 4 years and a fine not to exceed $25,000. So again, she's changing the elements and increasing the punishment of a crime so that it would impose a state-mandated local program that would flow down into Kern County and all the other counties. So Tracy Richardson was there talking about the proposed bill. And actually, it was interesting because then on March 13th, CityServe of Bakersfield, if you haven't heard of it, it's located downtown. It's a nonprofit mm-hmm. that is helping the homeless situation and drug addicts. Mm-hmm. Okay, so on March 13th, CityServe of Bakersfield hosted an event that brought in law enforcement, government, and local agencies, and the local faith community to focus on human trafficking. And they also wanted to announce their new awareness campaign that features mobile billboards mounted on 10 different GET buses.
Wow.
So on the billboards, it says Stop Human Trafficking, and they have a hotline phone number to report any suspicious activities, or if you know of someone who is a victim, or if you are a victim yourself, you can reach out to that hotline and get some help.
Wow.
Also present there at the event was Greg Terry, the BPD police chief, and he said his department last year investigated 59 cases of human trafficking, and 36 arrests were made during those investigations. So there is a lot of work being done on a lot of different fronts to combat what's happening. Sheriff Donnie Youngblood was warning people about human traffickers arriving illegally across the border with children and looking for children to traffic. He said that, you know, there are a lot of people who bring children in with them when they're crossing the border, and they have no identification with them to prove that they're a parent or a guardian or any kind of a relative. Tracy Richardson also talked about SB 1414 and the implications it can have if passed that are, like we said, are going to offer steeper punishment for human traffic customers, similar to the punishment for traffickers that themselves that passed with SB 14.
Steeper punishments we need as Bakersfield Republican women to help this SB 1414 move forward.
Well, I think being engaged, being aware, for first of all, about what's going on and how Kern County is heavily impacted by this, and also by reaching out to DA Zimmer and Senator Shannon Grove, seeing if there's anything that we can do as an organization, as individuals, to help her get the word out, like we're trying to do right now, and just being engaged in what's going on. And if they have rallies, we could show up at the rallies and whatever else they need.
Okay. So we'll continue to let our listeners know where we can help.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll connect with Senator Grove's office, and we'll ask her where she needs the help and what we can do, and we'll try to fill any gaps to make sure that this goes smoothly.
Yep, absolutely.
What else did you hear from Tracy?
She specifically brought up three other Senate bills. 1087 deals with the demand for oil here in California is not at the same rate as our production. And we know that the governor at one point had stacks and stacks of licensing for drilling that he just refused to deal with. So now we're having to import oil from really horrible places. She also talked about Senate Bill 974, which has to do with mining lithium or lithium production. So any tax revenue generated from that would stay in Kern County. And then she also talked about Senate Bill 1203, which is an education flex account, so that money parents pay in their taxes can follow their children, and up to $8,000 can be sent to an accredited school of the parent's choice for their child's education.
I love that. Pretty cool.
Have you heard anything educational-wise? Linda, what have you heard?
Yeah, I did. Actually, at our meeting, a lot happens at our meetings. You guys really need to come. Right before our meeting, one of our trustees from Kern High School District, Derek Teisinger, approached me and said that Kern County Superintendent of Schools, or KCSOS, was having a meeting that very night on the 12th to talk about a proposal from one of the trustees about having a written policy for what supplemental material can be inside of a classroom. Okay, so it's kind of sparking a lot of controversy because they, some of the members of this group who are trying to get a written policy actually know of about 14 books that are in some classroom situations in their teacher libraries. And these are for elementary and junior high kids. And they have a list of 14 books. The list is easy to obtain if you go on the KCSOS website. Some of them are called Flamer, Bluest Eye, Not All Boys Are Blue, and you kind of get the gist of the different titles. So anyway, Trustee Lori Cisneros, who just got on board after the 2022 election, I have that right, she's in her first term, she just wanted a written policy that would show how these supplemental materials that are used in the classrooms are being selected. It was never about banning books, and she just wanted an agreed-upon written policy of what materials should be in the classroom. Something that could be looked at for guidance down the road once, you know, a new book came around, and also so that enforcement could take place if a book was out of the realm of what they decide the policy should be. So the room, I actually watched the meeting on that evening. I couldn't attend in person, but it's on YouTube, so it's still on YouTube if you want to take a look at it. If you go to about the minute 20 mark, you can see that's where the public discussion was going on. And when you look at the room, it's pretty evenly divided as to those who are in favor of the policy suggestion and those who are not. And people spoke on both sides. Some of our members and associates spoke. We had Darren Amos, Corey Hanners gave an impassioned 2-minute speech, Jess Sanders, Pastor Angela Frazier, Terry Maxwell. And the other side also had some well-known people who stood up and expressed their point of view, Marissa Wood among them and some others. The education code was actually referenced a lot by the board, going back and forth, talking about different parts of it and how it was already having policies in place that address this. But there's an actual paragraph in it somewhere that addresses supplemental materials and states that any material in the classroom is there to enrich the curriculum and enhance student learning. And it also has to be aligned with state educational curriculum guidelines. And it's not there to replace the primary material. It's just to supplement it. So the question kind of becomes, well, how do books with detailed sex scenes and obscene language enrich curriculum at the elementary school level? And it was amazing and astounding to see all the different people speak and their different points of view. Like I said, you could go to that website and watch it. If you don't want to watch the whole thing, just start at that 20-minute mark and come to the end of all the discussion with the board, saying their opinions and everything. They took a vote, and there were 3 in favor of passing it, and 4 were against it. So trustees who opposed it were Julie Beechner, Paula Bray, Danielle Giordano, and Jose Gonzalez. And then those in favor were Mary Little, Lori Cisneros, and Joe Marcano. Now, I hate to say this, but it looks like the vote was cast on party lines. And it shouldn't be that way in a school environment. You know, it should be about what's best for the kids. What can an 8-year-old glean from reading about one boy doing something to another
boy? That's my whole question, is how are these books actually educational?
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I feel like it teaches them to be inappropriate.
Right.
You know, some of the videos and books that the kids see nowadays are much worse than what Playboy ever was.
And
really?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's astounding to me that there is any kind of educational purpose from these books.
Yeah, a point of view that the people in not in favor of passing this policy was that there are kids out there who have been abused and mistreated in various ways, and if they're actually reading about someone, a character in a book that resembles them, it kind of makes them feel that they're not alone. That was side of the argument.
Let's have books that are psychologically designed towards molestation then, not towards
the actual acts.
Approving youth molestation amongst each other. I mean, that's what is weird to me, is that it's almost like these are teaching tools to teach individuals and kiddos how to be inappropriate.
Yeah. Right. And then on the flip side of that, others were saying that, well, if you are a child who has experienced molestation or, you know, whatever, some kind of abuse, and you're reading about it, it makes you live through it another time. And you can never put it behind you because you're not getting any help from reading about it. And maybe you can identify with it, but then at the same time, how does that make you feel about what happened to you? And now you have to live it again and again and again. You know, it's just, I don't see the connection there.
Are these books required reading?
They are not. Supplemental material is only in the classroom if it enhances or enriches the material already approved by California or the school boards. You know, for the exact curriculum, for your curriculum. You have your basic curriculum, your textbook, your assigned reading, you know, the books we've all read, 1984, you know, I mean, you could name a whole bunch of them, and I'm sure they're different now. But there are approved curriculum, and then there are these supplemented materials that come in. And I think Lori Cisneros' point was that there should be a policy in place to decide what supplemental materials are brought in. And does it really enhance the curriculum? Does it really help a student learn? Or is it, you know, and why do we have to have controversial books? Why? Pick a book that still can allude to it, talk about it, but it doesn't have to be so explicit. I mean, you could still get your point across without having to go into details about, you know, sex acts. It's like, I don't want my 14-year-old reading about sex acts. You know, it's beyond understanding. And then when four of those trustees said, no, we don't want this policy, it's like, okay. And then one of the trustees, actually, she was saying that there was a book, she called it Push, but later found out that it was Precious. She says the book called Push, you know, was made into a movie and it was rated R and people took their kids to go see it and blah, blah, blah. And okay, great. But a parent or someone over 18 took a child to go see this movie knowing what the movie was going to be about. When a little kid sits down and picks up a book in the classroom and starts reading it, they have no idea what they're going to find in it. And there's no parent there looking over their shoulder to make sure that it isn't inappropriate.
Yeah.
So her argument to me was a little
reason for
off.
Having the librarian there to make sure that she is in management of what
else,
our youth is looking
yeah,
at.
Yeah, but this isn't the library that belongs to the whole school. This is each individual teacher's classroom has its own library in it.
They've
always been that way, but I think since COVID hit, and they were trying to isolate as much as possible, all the teachers started bringing in, you know, books for the kids to read during free reading time or whatever. But I think we're kind of missing the mark on what education is and what it's supposed to be. You know, there was a teacher who spoke and said that, well, we can have our kids read this because we still are teaching, you know, reading, writing, arithmetic, and the whole, and history and everything. And it's like, okay, but no one who stood up actually gave a good, solid reason for why this is, these books have to be there. I mean, give me a good, solid reason that I can say, yeah, I can see that, but I'm not seeing that.
I'd rather see books that have some kind of constructive psychological element that helps them to work through their questioning or their abuse or their post-traumatic stress that they went through, whatever it might be.
Right.
But to give children the vision or the imagine and the to give them the imagination of what sex acts are out there and to what extremities that they could be is just feeding the children with Satan, really. I mean, it's feeding them trash, garbage, and these kids are learning things that they never would have learned on the streets or in school.
Right.
Even though, you know, probably all of us learned about sex when we were in junior high from our friends and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You never would have learned it from
so many parents are opposed to it.
Book.
You know, and I worked and taught in both public and private schools. And one thing about working in a private school is you're working for the parent and for the parent's child. In a public school, you're working for the government. You're working for unions. You're working for funding, you know.
It's just a different perspective.
It is. It's, you know.
Well, I will just say, if I pick up a book for a child and the words "a graphic novel" are in the title, I'm probably going to put that one down and not give that one to somebody in my family that I love and care for. And I don't know why they're doing it in classrooms either.
Yeah, well, they're not labeled is one thing. I mean, if you're going to put a book in a classroom, it should hopefully get labeled with graphic content or sexual content, just like when you watch a movie.
There's
nothing that labels the books. You know, and a kid isn't, in my opinion, going to take the time to open the book and read the cover.
I still think, though, even if they were labeled, I still think that you would have individuals that are 13, 15, who are going to think, oh, cool.
Oh, right.
I need to learn about this.
I know. I've got to get that book.
What young men did with Playboy back in the time. It's the same kind of thing. It's just that it's now
in the classroom.
More so, it's accessible. Playboy was never accessible.
It was never in a classroom situation.
Yeah,
you know,
never.
If a kid brought it off the street, that's one thing. But to actually have it in your classroom library, no.
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 Unbelievable. Cover of this book says, "This book will save lives." It's a quote from a National Award book finalist.
And the book is called Flamer.
I read an excerpt of it. And full disclosure, I did not read this whole thing. But the excerpt is about a bunch of junior high school boys going to summer camp, and they're all ejaculating into a jar and talking about how it feels. And if you don't ejaculate into the jar, then you're going to have to drink what's in the jar. So that was enough for me to not want to ever recommend this book to anybody.
That is so true, you know, and you can pick up a book, you go to Barnes & Noble or any bookstore and take a book off the shelf and you read the cover, the inside flap of it to kind of give you, a little bit of insight what it is. Flip through it and I'll just stop on a page or two every once in a while just to see, you know, what the storyline's all about. And if something like that catches my eye, guess what? It's going back on the shelf.
That is graphic words. I mean, it's hard for me to even hear you say it here in this room with us. I just can't imagine our youth spending their time on this.
Are we confident that our kids will say, I can tell this is bad for me, I'm going to put it down and I'm going to walk away from it and choose something else?
No, they won't.
Depending on the age of your kid and their maturity level, some of them would be able to do that, others not. So why put it in a classroom when it's not age appropriate even for anybody under 18 to read? I mean, if you have to have a parent go with you to an R-rated movie, this is R, or possibly X in some ways.
Yeah.
How come you don't have to have a parent sitting next to you reading that with you to explain it to you like they would in a movie?
You know what? And there's going to be kids that are going to just make a big assumptive jump that if the book is available to them, that it's okay to read.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because they trust their authority. Because what do we teach them in the home? We teach them to, you know, adults know, you know, trust adults, you know, they have your best interest at heart, blah, 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 which we can't say anymore. That's so not true.
No, we're learning all these instances where it's just not good anymore. Mm-hmm. We have to just teach our kids to just be really logical about things.
And also, if you're listening to us right now, I know you have your own opinions, just like these are our own opinions. They don't represent our club. They're just what we believe as moms, as Christians, as conservatives, you know, how we want to see our kids grow up. Two out of the three of us have grown kids already out of the house. But, you know, so we're not trying to offend anybody. We're just telling you what we think. Because when we look at what's happening and read little excerpts like this, it's like common sense would tell you this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing.
The way that I see it is that it's actually teaching children in this trend world of be bisexual. That's what it's, I don't know.
Remember when it used to be trendy to, we'd have, my kids wore school uniforms. And the big thing, the big trend was who could have the loudest color tennis shoe. Because That's the only way you can express yourself is through the color and style of your tennis shoe. And that was like, you know, the big thing everybody had to worry about. Now we have to worry about, is my kid going to be reading smut when they go to school? You know? It's like that, and that's not that long ago, maybe 15 years. But the more leeway we give in what is okay and what society says is acceptable, the less we are protecting our kids.
I agree. From Vince Fong's office, Ireland Comstock. Can you tell us what you heard?
Yes, Ireland specifically referenced AB 297, which was signed by the governor. It's a local assistance grant program for fire prevention in those communities that have a really high risk of severe fire. So they're going to get better emergency equipment and better public evacuation routes and vegetation management around roadways. I think that's really great, and we're very excited that that one was signed by the governor. Then she also referenced AB 724, which Assemblyman Fong introduced, which deals with firearms manuals and testing so that we can expand the languages from English and Spanish and traditional Chinese to Tagalog, Vietnamese, Korean, Dari, and even Armenian. And then AB 2003 deals with permitting candidates whose declaration of candidacy has been filed for primary election to be able to withdraw, which is something that Assemblyman Fong is facing right now. Was a delightful gal. Her name is Jenny Holterman, and she is with the Water Association of Kern County, which is a nonprofit that was created to inform and educate the public and the water community about water issues in Kern County. She's a wonderful gal. She's a wife. She's a mother. She's a fourth-generation almond farmer here in the Central Valley. And did you know, Linda, I was so surprised that she told us that California grows 80% of the world's supply of almonds.
I knew that, but she says almonds. But I do not. I knew that because I've been following this for a little bit, just in the newspaper and attending some of the events that they have. But it's still pretty surprising. 80%.
Yeah. And she also talked about California farmers grow more than half of the country's fruit, nuts, and vegetable, and we do it on only 3% of the U.S. farmland.
That's incredible.
Amazing, isn't that? Yeah, we've got a lot of inventive and very smart farmers out there to be able to do that.
So guess how many gallons it takes to grow a watermelon?
Well, I know the answer, but
when we say water is important, you need to hear these types of statistics. So one watermelon takes, what is it, Nicole?
100 gallons.
100 gallons of water.
Unbelievable.
And how much water does it take for one pizza?
300 gallons.
No way.
300 gallons to do the meat and vegetables and cheese and water the wheat to make the crust. It takes 300 gallons. I was shocked.
Mm-hmm. What I'm shocked about is that we let water out of our fresh rivers and we allow it to go into the ocean. That's where I'm shocked.
Exactly. So we do get water from the Delta. I know that you have all heard of the Delta. 76% of the water from the Delta goes right out to the ocean.
I just don't understand how we can allow that to happen. It's we need storage. Assemblyman Vince Fong has been pushing for water storage for years now. And if we don't get to it, California, we will not have almonds or almonds. We will not have fruits and nuts. That we're going to be in some, we're going to be uncomfortable.
Right. Think of it too. If say it was a different resource, say it was diamonds, say we had this huge supply of diamonds, but every year we decided to wash out to the ocean 75% of the diamonds that were mined. Who would say that's okay? You better believe they'd be having storage to put all those diamonds.
Yeah.
And to us, to the Central Valley, to California, to farmers, water is as good as a diamond.
Absolutely, because it's so scarce. And when 76% of the Delta is being sent out to the ocean, that equates to 10 million acre feet a year.
Wow.
So picture 1 acre of ground with a foot of water sitting on it. 10 million of those is just going right out to the ocean.
And there are ways that we could capture it. We could capture it. We could once it's out there, we can do desalinization.
Correct.
I mean, you know, that's not being looked at for a variety of reasons, one of which is the environmentalists oppose it because they see it as something that'll work. This is just my opinion. I don't know how they see it. But in my mind, they see it that it'll not only work and be cost effective, but it will also ruin their destination of where they want to control all this water.
You know, if you think back into recent months, we've had that atmospheric river flow come through and just dump incredible amounts of rain and snowfall on the state of California. And I asked her specifically, you know, did that help us at all? Did that do us any good? And her response was, we would have to have 15 years of those atmospheric events in order to fill up the aquifer below ground.
Yeah, but is that because we're letting all that water go?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, I don't think she really finished answering that question because it's like, why would it take that long if we were actually trapping the water to fill up the aquifers? So, I don't know.
Well, I think the reality is that we don't have the water storage that we need to be able to sustain our future food growth. So that's where legislators need to get with it.
Well, they want farmers to fallow 1 million acres of land. That's how they're going to address it. Fallow your land, farmer. Grow anything on it.
What? So my husband, we were driving headed towards Los Angeles, and we were going towards a grapevine, and there's all these beautiful crops on either side of the 99 or the 5, you know. And he kind of heaved a heavy sigh, and I looked over at him and I said, "What's up with that?" And he says, "Yeah, all this is going to be gone pretty soon."
Mm-hmm. No way. Oh yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. Because either the fish have to have it or the ocean has to have it. You know, it's
people having it.
Right. No, they're restricting people's use of water in urban developments and residential. You're only allowed 55 gallons per person per day in your household. And they want to get that down to even 40 gallons. So it's okay to take water away from the people, but it's better to give it to the ocean, right? And better to give it to the Delta smelt. And better to not come up with ways to actually recycle it or use it. Let the runoff just happen. It's like, okay, but you know, at a certain point, people aren't going to be able to live on 2 gallons of water a day per person once they get
down
to
that. Not only that, but we won't have food to be able to eat to nourish our body. So the logic here is out the window.
Right, unless your logic is depopulation. I don't know.
That very well might be the logic.
Did a great job with educating our members about what's going on with our water here in California, in Kern County, how we share water. She talked a little bit about SGMA, Sustainable Groundwater Management Associations that are supposed to be set up to help with the groundwater situation. It was very educational. It's a lot of information, There are so many different agencies and both private and government agencies that are involved in the whole water situation. I don't know, it's just monumental in my mind, you know, I mean, to get your head around it and really figure out what the best thing to do. I know one of the best things not to do is to let all that water go out to the ocean.
I agree. No, something has to happen, and I think we're losing time. If anything, you know, they keep talking about environmental concerns of water melting and at the North Pole. It's also, well, what about the fact that we don't have water to feed us, to grow our crops, and to nourish our bodies? What's going to happen there to clean our bodies? I mean, there's a number of reasons why we need water.
Right, and so if our farmers aren't going to be using the food in the quantities that they are now to feed the rest of the United States and parts of the world.
Our population's growing.
Well, where is that production going to come from?
Yeah, where are
we going to outsource that to other countries too and expect that we're going to get our crops, you know, products from other countries?
One interesting thing that she pointed out was, you know, kind of comparing U.S. agriculture from between the different states. And California's agriculture production is $55.9 billion. The next closest is Iowa at $26
billion. Wow, that's half.
Half.
I believe that Jenny said that California would be considered the fifth largest international producer if we were to be our own country.
Yes, I remember her saying that too.
That is how important our agriculture is to the world.
Exactly. So if they don't let us farm, what happens? Where is that food going to come from?
And circling back to that, 80% of almonds of the world are from Kern County. The next closest is 5% in Australia.
Oh my gosh. Now, what part of the world, I wonder, is the highest in almond consumption or use?
I don't know. Yeah, we eat a lot
of
them here.
Interesting. I know we ship a lot out to the Asian countries, though, too, because almonds are a big part of their cooking, their diet.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I did a little bit of looking into it on the internet, kernvote.com, as well as sos.ca.gov, which is the California Secretary of State. In Congressional District 20, it looks like there's going to be a runoff in November between Assemblyman Vince Fong and Sheriff Mike Boudreaux. Assembly District 32, Vince Fong and Ken Weir are the top two.
Okay.
So a little confusing to me, though. But guess what I heard?
What did you hear?
I heard there's most likely going to be a special election for Assembly District 32 once Vince Fong vacates his seat. Because obviously winning both seats, he can only fill one.
Correct.
Okay. So the March 19th special election is going to determine who takes over for the vacant seat for the rest of the term that ends in January 5th of 2025. And if there's no clear winner, though, after the March 19th election, then a runoff election happens between those top two candidates, and it'll be on May 21st. So going into the special election, Vince Fong is on the ballot. I do not believe Mike Boudreaux is on the ballot, though. But let me check that. Let's just make sure before I do anything. There's a special election that we've already received our ballots for, and on March 19th is when you can actually go in and vote in person if you choose to. That election is to take over for the vacant seat for the rest of the term that Congressman McCarthy left, and that term ends January 5th, 2025. Both Vince Fong and Sheriff Mike Boudreaux are in that race as well. So whoever wins that one, or if neither candidate receives 50% plus one vote, then there will be a runoff again on May 21st. So things are still a little bit up in the air as far as in my mind. But if you want to check the status of your ballot to see if it was counted, you could go to kernvote.com and you can track it there. And you can also track statewide ballot results at sos.ca.gov. In Kern County, Proposition 1 looks like it will fail, with 62.38% voting no and 37.62% voting yes. However, in the whole state of California, it's really too close to call right now because there are 50.2% yes votes and 49.8% no votes. So in my mind, that pretty much proves, once again, that Kern County voters are smarter than the average bear on the California flag. Mayor Goh has won her race. She will be our mayor for the next 4 years. Supervisor David Couch is on his way to a victory for District 4. And District 1 winner looks like it's going to be Supervisor Philip Peters as he heads into his second term. District 5 race for supervisor. We had a Republican contender in Darren Amos. He did pretty well, but it looks like there's going to be a runoff in November with Leticia Perez and Kim Salas, both Democrats. So it'll be the top two of them coming up in November. The election results to date. Not all precincts have completely reported those, so things could change. Numbers could go up or down. I've noticed in different news, from different news sources, that they've called winners in various races. I don't know what they're basing that on. But our report today and just the information that I just disseminated is just from up to this point in time.
Isn't there something going on tonight, Patty?
There is. We're so excited to have our member suite social. This is an event in the evening at our President Linda Willis's house. She so graciously offered her yard for us to do this. And it's a way for our new members to meet our current members and to create the network and to establish relationships and friendships and just to have a nice time with each other.
Absolutely. And we're looking forward to it tonight. By the time this podcast gets posted, though, it'll be over with. So we're going to give you an update about what happened at our girls' night.
And speaking of using the network, Bakersfield Republican Women really enjoys networking with other groups. So Kay Bell, who is our membership secretary, and Linda Willis, our president, and I all went up to Tehachapi, and we got to participate in their elections of a new executive board. So we're very excited for Tehachapi Republican Women. We're excited to give them advice if they need it or to support their events. And we invite them to come to our events, and we like to go to their events. I think it's going to be great that they've got their new board established and they can move forward and do great things up in Tehachapi.
Absolutely. We had a great time up there. Met a lot of really nice ladies, very enthusiastic ladies who want to grow their club. I think they're at a membership of about 25 right now, but that is nothing to sneeze at. That is great because mm-hmm. clubs start somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, like we talked about last time, Barbara Love started a group with just a few of her friends, and look where we are now. So it's possible to start with 25 and end up with 2,500.
Patty, tell us about what we can expect for our next meeting.
Our next general membership meeting is April 9th, and you can go to bakersfieldrwf.org to make a reservation. Our speaker is Mayor Karen Goh, and she's going to talk to us about one of the topics that she says she gets asked about the most, and that is homelessness. That is on everybody's mind right now.
Yes.
Absolutely. Last month, if you remember, in February, we had our speaker was DA Cindy Zimmer, and she talked about the impact of crime and drugs in regards to homelessness and the initiative that she is working on with other DAs throughout California, the Crime, Homelessness, and Drug Addiction Act, Reduction Act, that they're wanting to get on the November ballot. And I did a little bit of research, and I found out that there are some reports out there indicating that 75% of the needed signatures have already been gathered and approved. And that means that out of the total needed of 546,651, we only need about 137,000 more. So we're almost there to get this qualified early.
Please sign that petition. If you happen to go down to Luigi's, I know Cynthia Zimmer is down there every day at lunch asking people to sign her petition for her.
Hey, there you go. Get a nice lunch. And so you can see why it's so important that we attend all these different school board meetings. Kern High School District, Bakersfield City, KCSOS. And for that matter, we should be out there attending the supervisor meetings and city council meetings, too.
So, Patty, tell us about what we're going to look forward to in the future with Bakersfield Republican Women.
Well, if you want to show your conservative spirit and you don't want to do it politically, one way you can do it is to help out at the mission at Kern County. The third Wednesday of every month, a group of Bakersfield Republican Women Federated members go down there and we chop vegetables and do meal prep for the staff down there. And it doesn't take very long. It just is about an hour and a half or so. And then oftentimes a group of us will head down to Luigi's and have lunch afterwards. So there's that coming up. April 16th is our fabulously fun Republican Unity Mixer.
Yeah.
And the Leadership Committee is the committee that puts those things together. So if you think that you want to get together and help Republicans network with other Republicans in Kern County, go to our website at bakersfieldrwf.org and look at all the events we have coming up. And please join us. Please sign up to come to something. If it's a meeting or if it's an event, if you want to chop vegetables at the Mission at Kern County, we've got a myriad of things for you to help with.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on our second episode on Guess What I Heard. Send us a DM, a direct message to our Instagram page, Bakersfield RWF. We want to hear from you. Whether you're a seasoned political veteran or just dipping your toes into the world of conservative activism, Bakersfield Republican Women Federated welcomes you. Join us as we continue our mission to educate, empower, and engage, because together we can make a difference. Learn about how to become a member with Bakersfield Republican Women Federated at bakersfieldrwf.org. Be sure to subscribe for more updates, and until next time, stay informed, stay empowered, and stay Republican.